You're listening to a podcast from the Finnish Football Show.
Yes, it's the Finnish Football Show, and we're back today to pick over the bones, it has to be said, of Finland's disappointing 4-1 defeat to Wales in the playoffs to qualify for Euro 2024. We talked about it last week ahead of the game, but we're back now to look at what actually went down. I'm delighted to be joined today, firstly, by Ali Manson. Hi, Ali.
Moikka.
By Keke Mulari. Keke, hi.
Terve.
And we've got a real treat for you, listener, as well, making one of his long-anticipated cameo appearances, Mark Hayton. Hi, Mark.
Hey, buddy. Hi.
I think I made him blush, listener. So how about if I take some of that heat away from you, Mark, and put it on you. Myself? Because on Thursday evening, just a couple of hours before kickoff, I was Rich had been doing the kind of BBC radio stuff early in the morning, and then I got a late call up into BBC Radio 5 Live ahead of the match, and I did my prep and I knew who I was going to talk about and what I was going to say, and I said this about Finland's defence.
Yeah, I think like Luke has grown. He's been in the Finland team for years, and he's really grown into steady, dependable one. Now one of the most mature players in the team, at least on the pitch. Off the pitch, he's a little bit crazy and a little bit wacky. We had him on our podcast for an interview a few years ago, and he tried to do the interview while wearing a full head mask of an eagle owl, which is kind of the nickname of the Finland team. So he'll be cold and focused on the pitch, and then if Finland get the result we hope for, then you'll see him like leading the cheers with the fans at the end of the game. But yeah, him and then the centre back pair of Ivanov and Kenholz, they're kind of the mature, solid defence around which the Finland team will be built.
Yeah, and so I came out of that interview all pumped up, and 2 minutes into the game, Finland's defence stitched me up like a kipper. Anyway, let's start our report of the match with you, Keke. Tell us about your day. You travelled down there from Kent down to South Wales. Give us a little bit of atmosphere from your day.
No, it was good, mate. I mean, as always, the don't let the football spoil going to the football, I suppose. But yeah, it was, you know, it's always good fun. Jumped on the train, had my little lad, Kimmy, with me for his first Hulkia away game. So, yeah, Wales gave us the opportunity to sort that one out without too much expense and drama. So we jumped on the train, met a few familiar faces, and had a few more Finland fans on the train from Paddington, pulled into Cardiff. And yeah, if anyone knows Cardiff, it's all pretty central there. The train central railway station is right in the town centre, so not far to walk to the first watering hole. Yeah, we made our way to the Cambrian tap, and it was absolutely chock-a-block with Finland fans. There was a bit of karaoke going on and all sorts. So a few beers in there. Met Rich in there. He was a couple of minutes behind me on the next train, so he came in there straight away. And yeah, we got down to some serious boozing and discussing what sort of party we were going to have when we got going.
Mark,
did your boys indulge in the cultural the cultural pride that is train cans?
Oh, of course, yeah. There was plenty of train cans. Yeah, don't worry about that, mate. Yeah, there was.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that got us into the spirit. And then
it should be said that Kimmy is about 10 years old, so his train cans would have been different to yours, I'm guessing.
That's it. Yeah, he's but he's had enough J2O to last him a lifetime on this trip. He's still buzzing off all the sugar out of that, I think. But yeah, he had his own sort of hangover, J2O hangover. But no, he was good as gold. He enjoyed it. But yeah, we got to the pub, had a few beers, went round to the SME Core pub, Hades Bar, and collected our tickets. And yeah, and then just chilled out, waiting for the fan march to start. So yeah, I think that kicked off about 4:30, something like 4:45, and we made a slow walk down to the Cardiff City Stadium. As you can imagine, exactly the same deal as you get in Helsinki, stopping traffic, being escorted down there by the local plod. And yeah, me and Rich right down the front, full voice, giving it our all. And
how was it received by the locals, Keke, that marching thing? Because, you know, that might in the wrong place, might not be taken so well. But, you know, the actual march is good-natured. It's not a problem, but, you know, you're away from home now.
Yeah, no, they were good as gold. You know, there was quite a lot of waves and quite a lot of stunned faces with their phones going, "What is this oddity coming down the road?" But but no, it was good, mate. It was good, and there was a good few thousand in the march. You know, like, I don't know how many tickets we sold. I think there must have been, a couple of thousand tickets. So yeah, it felt like almost everyone was there in the march. So it sort of tailed back for quite a way, but it was brilliant, mate. Really good. Mm.
And then you got to the ground and the game started. So,
yeah.
Ali, do you want to take us through the lineup of the team and how it was, and let's all chip in with any comments about any surprises or what we thought of that when we saw the lineup.
Well, for me, when I saw the lineup, I was relatively happy with it. I could see why River went with that starting 11. And again, depending on which paper you read or outlet or coverage, it's sometimes hard to know these days whether we're lining up with a 3-5-2, 5-3-2, or like a 4-4-2 in and out of possession. So obviously we had Luka in goal, and then I mean the lineup that I'm going to read out is probably going to read more like a 4-4-2, but I think we often know it's pretty flexible. So Alho, right back, with Tenho and Ivanov, centre backs, and then possibly Peltola as like a left back, but also depending if it was out of possession, maybe more of a left centre back. Then Robin Lund, Schüle, Kamara and Hawkins in the midfield with Pukki and Poyanpalo up front. Yeah, I think, when man to man, you'd sort of go, yeah, I can see why he's gone with that. Again, in theory, some defensive solidity. I know we've often spoken about, what Pukki's role has been in the last sort of couple of games, but he's been playing really well in the MLS. So I can totally understand if you're picking on form why River went for him. Poyanpalo, for me, has to start. So in an attacking sense, there was sort of no problem there either. And I think we'd probably all say that Schüle and Kamara in the centre are pretty solid and formidable on their day. So when it comes to an actual starting 11, I didn't really have any grumbles. But again, that was all fine leading up to kickoff, and then it kicked off.
Go on, Mark. Talk us through the start of the game.
Well, I mean, I don't think it could have gotten off to a worse start. I think, one thing that certainly, in retrospect, I didn't factor in too much, I think very few people kind of missed, was the last time we played Wales, they were getting over the sort of the Bale Ramsey era. Right, so they were pretty slow and ponderous, right? They weren't particularly well formed. You look at this Wales team, and they're all young, and they're all pretty quick. And so what they did is first of all, Keke, you could tell me, but the atmosphere sounded like in Cardiff, like it was an absolute banger. Like they were properly hyped up, and the stadium was going for it. So they just came out of the blocks, on fire. We almost certainly weren't ready for that, because I think River likes to just settle into it. Like he's usually had like a little bit of a a little bit of a flurry at the start, but then tries to settle into games. And we were on the back foot straight away, and they hit, you know, I mean, there was a couple of bubbles and deflections in the 1-2, but ball comes into the box, a man's over, he's got far too much space because Belt will have, well, nobody's really done anything wrong. They've just made a nice 1-2, they've gotten through into the box, shot, good save, and then the rebound. There's three or four players looking at Nico Williams, trying to work out which one should be marking him. So, you know, 2 minutes in, whatever the game plan was, which I'm sure from River would be just don't concede the first.
Most game plans don't have a conceding an early goal in them.
It's the very definition of keep it tight, lads, isn't it?
Yeah. So.
Mark, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, the atmosphere, as you can imagine, I mean, obviously, we always give a good account of ourselves when we sing our national anthem. And I don't know if anyone's seen the photograph that was taken from the other end of the ground with all the, just before the kickoff, for all the Finland fans with their scarves in the air for the national anthem. It's a cracking picture. So, you know, have a look at that one when you can. And we, you know, it was brilliant. But then, some people listening to this may or may not know that the Welsh have got form for singing, and when they broke their song out, I don't know if it's their national anthem or unofficial national anthem or what it is, but they had a few choir boys in that crowd, I'm telling you, because it was sort of spine tingling stuff, and they really did, as Mark said, they really did pump their players up, and they come firing out the blocks. I mean, to go 1-0 down after 2 minutes, it's just a proper kick in the nuts, isn't it? You know what I mean? I mean, we haven't even sort of got ourselves organised yet. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you're 1-0 down. But like the way it sort of happened, I think, as Mark alluded to, it did look like, having watched it back, there was a bit of a mix-up between Ivanov and Ten Hag. I don't know if their communication was the greatest. Both of them sort of went for the same ball or the same man. You know, they do get lucky. The ball breaks away. Lookie makes a fantastic save, and then Peltola doesn't. He sort of tracks the guy, doesn't bother putting in a tackle, and Radhead doesn't really react, and boom, there we are. It's 1-0.
Yeah, and then again, if you look at the starting lineup, and you think that's pretty much as strong as we can do. But then you take a look at it with another eye and you think, okay, well, how many of those starting 11 has experienced an atmosphere like the one in Cardiff? And then you go, well, Luca has. Glenn's probably felt something similar in Leeds and probably in the derby in Glasgow. Yeah, then you've got maybe Yolle's had a bit of Italian experience, a bit of Leverkusen experience. Demo Pukki's definitely had it. But then apart from that, Schuller maybe in the Swedish League derby. But apart from that, Ivanov, Peltola, Tenho, that might be the first time they've been sitting under that kind of pressure with that kind of, with that kind of responsibility. And then you look at it and think, actually, it's a really big ask for these guys.
I mean, just on the lineup quickly, sorry to go back a step, but just on the lineup, I think when it came through, the general feeling around the fans in the pub was a little bit surprised. Do you know what I mean? And as you say, Ali, there is, whether it's in possession or out of possession, how the formation goes, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, where I saw it posted, it was posted as like a 4-3-3. And I mean, all well and good. I think Daniel Hawkins actually was one of the better players, but it was a bit of a surprise to see him start. I think Miro Tenho was a bit of a surprise, and it's all very well and good speaking with hindsight, but you know, the words that were sort of coming out were, you know, you've got Hoskonen, who's in the middle of a season in Poland, and you've got Tenho, who's just starting his season in Sweden. You know, Hawkins also in the Nordic League, so that season is literally just starting. And you know, if you do want to change it up, you had Freddie Jensen in the squad. You know, he's a Bundesliga regular every week. So how comes he's not getting in the side? Do you know what I mean? It's like, so it was a I have to say, you know, a little bit of that is with hindsight, but there was a bit of surprise with some of these names when the squad lineup did come through.
It's a very interesting point, Keke, about where these players are in their season. That hadn't even occurred to me. But yeah, I mean, Hoskonen's been good for the Hawkeye in the last few times that he's played, and Richard Jensen wasn't in there either. Who've both been pretty solid. If you're going to play, yeah. I was also not sure, and I will give myself a kudos here. I said this on the radio as well, that I wasn't sure if 4-3-3 was how they would line up. And I could see those, you know, that Alho might go wide right and Hawkins might drop wide left, and then you've got a sort of 3-5-2. But I don't know if that necessarily gets the best out of Peltola, potentially, as a left-sided of those three at the back. But Sorry, Mark, go on.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that we settled after that into the game and then took control of the ball and had a lot of the possession, which, again, potentially played into Wales's hands. You talked about them having quick forwards. They wanted the ball on the break, and that's probably the sort of game that we would like to have played against them. And yet they backed off and we took the ball. And at one stage, we had like 70% of possession, but 66% of that 70 was in our own half. And I think possession is a good stat. The old FOTMOB app that you put me onto, Keke, really splits it down and has a few ways of looking at that. And I think that's quite telling. Ali?
Well, yeah, just on that, do you think that took us by surprise a little bit, or took Reba by surprise, the fact that they were like, yeah, do you know what? You guys take the ball. Because I think if you've done your scouting on Wales, you know that they have young, quick players that are happy to do really good off the work. So it sort of felt like we fell into that trap a little bit, possibly by accident as well. Possibly, you know, it wasn't the plan to have a lot of the ball. And, well, yeah, as you said, Mark, it's all very well like having 60-70% of the ball, which of course can calm the nerves down, particularly after conceding an early goal. Now, that is probably the right thing to do. But then in those moments, if all you're doing is passing back, I sort of feel like we really fell into the trap that they laid out for us.
Well, that, and I think that's been since 2021, since Rive came in with like the Revolution 4-4-2 Leicester City model on the counter-attack. And then when we went into the tournament, he'd adjusted that to this, what I think is the sort of current approach, which is this 5-3-2 with fullbacks that, when you've got the ball, they move up into midfield and you drop into a back four, which is nice and clever. But what it really means is when you start off, like when Luque's got a goal kick, you've got five or six players really deep, which means you've got a lot of passing options, which means you've got the ball in your own half. And if the opposition doesn't want to press you, which Wales didn't want to at all because they'd already gotten the lead, like they were like, okay, you come and get us now because we've already got our nose in front, then it's sort of to be expected. And I think it's another thing that I was, you know, that it really caught my eye over the course of the game. We did quieten the game down. We took control of it and we took possession. But then I was thinking that back five is deep because in Rive's original plan, he had to accommodate Arayuri and Toivio, right? Who are really good big centre backs, but they're not very quick. But if you look at Ivanov, Tenho, Peltonen, they're young. They're not massive dudes. They're pretty good in the air, but they aren't that bad in a foot race. So you could actually shift that like back line a lot further up the pitch. You could do just different things with the players. And I got the impression that I think he's playing a system that, you know, he's playing the system he likes from the previous generation almost. And the players he's got don't exactly fit into it now.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I think that was Wales's plan. Once they got that early goal, they were happy to just sit back, let us try and unpick them, unlock them, and which, to be fair, we did do on a couple of occasions. But then they were able to let us have the ball because they had their nose in front. I mean, it was just after they scored, after about 10 or so minutes, Daniel Hawkins had a decent enough header. I mean, Lod crosses the ball, Alhob heads it back across goal, and Hawkins, was it? No, it wasn't a header. It was a volley, wasn't it? But anyways, he should have hit the target. I think smashed it over. You know, he was sort of knocking on the door. Then just after that, you had a clever little run from Pukki, and even off, just bypassed the midfield, knocks it straight over the top. And again, you know, Pukki hit a bit of a tame shot, but we were sort of trying things. Do you know what I mean? There was Yolle had a shot on about 20, 25 minutes, a little half shot, but yeah, it was just those. You know, if one of those goes in, it's a different game, isn't it? But yeah, Wales were happy to try and soak that up, and then sort of hit us on the break, and it is sort of what happened. I mean, as I said, like 35 minutes or so, Yolle had that shot, and then Pukki pounces on that loose ball. I don't know if you saw that one. There was a loose Wales pass. Pukki pounced on it. Couldn't do anything with it. But yeah, it was just after another Yolle shot that we got done again, because and Wales moved so quick, like two or three passes in 2 seconds, and they're up our end of the pitch, and they got a free kick from where the second goal came from.
Yeah, right on the edge of the box, and lining up for that was Nico Williams and Harry Wilson, and it was a simple but nicely worked free kick. Wilson ran as if he was going to shoot it with his left foot, and he sort of stepped over it, backheeled it a little, and Williams came in with his right foot and hit this sort of rising, curling shot into the left-hand side of Luque's goal. Not that high, but Luque didn't get across to it and wasn't really anywhere near it. And after that possession and chances to then get sucker punched like that was, again, it was another kick in the stomach, wasn't it? And then it seemed like things were really, really going against us. But we got that flicker of hope just before half time. Keke, take us through how that was in the stadium.
I mean, that you know, it obviously gutted about the 2-0, and just on that one quickly. I mean, obviously I've had the luxury, well, not really, it's not a luxury at all, it's been blimmin' painful, but I've been able to watch it back in slow motion, that free kick. But obviously in real time it happens a lot quicker. But I just think once they realise the fella's not going to shoot and he backheels it to his mate, the wall just sort of seems to stand there and watch and wait to see what's going to happen rather than rush it. You know, the ball's live, isn't it? Let's rush out there and see if we can at least charge this down. But anyway, it went in 2-0 down. But yeah, the 2-1 is all about Pukki, I'm afraid. It was an absolutely fantastic finish, neat finish. He sort of gave the keeper the eyes and, no-look shot into the other side of the goal, which was brilliant. We obviously went bananas, and we're thinking to ourselves, just before half-time, 2-1, you know, that's going to give us spark us back into life, and we're going to be up for this when we come back out in the second half. I mean, the goal came, Nikolai Alho did okay. He was running down the wing, sort of cut it in. Yolle had a little touch, and it went off to Pukki, and as I said, cracking little no-look finish. I mean,
and that optimism lasted the whole 20 minutes of half time. And then at the start of the second half, came another really, really quick goal. Who wants to talk us through the third Wales goal from Brennan Johnson?
Oh mate, this is just, I mean, this poor old Miro Tenho again. I think he gets penalised for a handball. You know, free kick, ball just seems to sort of bounce up and hit him on the hand. So, ref's blown, give a free kick to Wales. They crossed it in. I mean, we've got the shortest bloke in the team, Daniel Hawkins, marking a fellow at the back post. So, to be fair to him, Dan does try. He does try to get up and get something on it, but the Wales player beats him to it, nods it back across. By this time, Daniel Hawkins is laying flat out on the ground, in doing so, playing every single Wales player on site.
That's like, really, really harsh, luck. Isn't it? Like, really unlucky.
You know, yeah. Stayed on his feet and landed, you know, and been a bit further forward. Johnson might have been offside.
Well, I think there was two of them on Hawkins. It was Ampadu and someone else. It might have been Ampadu that then got the header. But it was one of those where watching it on TV, you could see before he'd even kicked the ball, the free kick came in, you're like, well, hold on, there's two that there. So if the ball goes to the back stick, we're done. And it's, again, you don't even have to watch it in slow motion to know this is going to be a problem. And then, it's like when you can predict a goal almost 4 seconds before it actually goes in, it's heartbreaking.
And I think after half time as well, I mean, Bucky's goal was timed so well that you were thinking, like, you know, it just takes, you know, Wales are that kind of team. If we get one back, if we nick something early in the second half, they might be like, they'll start shaking. And then it was so easily prevented. Like, it's, you would never expect the River team to not catch an overload at the back post. It's basics.
Yeah, it was, it really was that was another sucker punch. You know what I mean? It's just like we turned up just to get done in the belly every 5 minutes. You know what I mean? It was pretty awful. But before they scored the next legitimate one, they had the ball in the net again. But that was ruled out for from VAR. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw watching on the telly what it was actually ruled out for. I mean, Luque was apoplectic when the goal was given. He was 100% sure that he'd stopped it from crossing the line, but
showed that, did they? They didn't show the Hawkeye.
It was over the line, but there was a lad was a foul, in front. I think it was an offside interfering with the keeper. I think it wasn't exactly a foul, but there was a bloke standing in front of him, blocking his in an offside position, blocking his view. So that's but the ball it did cross the line, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
That one
wasn't given.
Second half, Finland still had the majority of possession again. Second half, 57%. First half, 61%. Like, we had the ball, but then came, you know, that goal, obviously the 47th minute, and then sort of 73rd, 77th minute, a raft of substitutions for Finland. Jensen on for Pukki. Kairinen on for Schüller, Ampman on for Lud, Chelman on for Bokinbalo, Niskanen on for Alho, but nothing really, by that time, nothing was really sticking, was it? We were chasing a game and just not really able to create anything concrete.
Yeah, and those changes are quite interesting in one sense, because it basically looks like you've got sort of one old technical bunch and a young, quick, athletic bunch, and you're swapping one for the other, and it doesn't work like that. It would have been nice to see like Antman on earlier, you know what I mean, with a bit of an injection of pace, maybe, you know, like working up front with Bojanpalo and Bukki. But then if you're going to just change everybody, then everybody has to get used to the game. And I think, you know, we really after the third goal, they sat back and hit us again on the counter. We struggled to break them down. And I just thought, you know, we needed a bit more. It doesn't make sense to make you know, sort of five wholesale changes, and then just try to do something with a new group. It was too many changes all at once.
Talk us through that final goal at that. Well, it was, Ten Hag's greatest game, was it?
You can see it. I mean, you can see it, can't you? Like, in the replays, like, he checks over his shoulder to see where the lad is, and you can see also see was it Dan James who got the fourth one? So you can see Dan James, his face lights up, because like he can see Ten Hag checking for him, and he knows as soon as Ten Hag's looking away, he sprints like he's got him, and he knows he's got him, like he can make up the distance. Once he's robbed Ten Hag at the back, it's a cool finish, but But I think I just feel by that time Tenho is like the only guy back in our half. Everybody's squeezed up. So again, it's a bit like, you know, we could have done a version of that earlier. We could have pushed up the pitch earlier and had a defense, but because we were 3-1 down, just everybody was forward. And he had no help. I don't know if he got a shout or if he got a call, but you know, I would be in that position. You need somebody on you at the back to say like, "Hey, hoof it," or get rid of it.
As the Welsh player robs him, I mean, poor old Tenho. You just see him trying to sort of on his hands and knees, trying to scramble back to his feet, and that pretty much summed up his evening, really, and how all of us were feeling at that point. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh. And he did get back to his feet and try and chase the bloke down, but the ball was in the back of the net before he got anywhere near there, and he just ended up with his rod in his hands. You know what I mean? It was a bit of a sorry state of affairs.
I was just going to say, it would be interesting to sort of get some kind of insight on the mentality of the coaching staff and the players, even when it went to 3-1, sort of, you know, conceding that goal and like that terrible, terrible goal after half time. Because I mean, I often err on the side of being pessimistic just in general when it comes to me watching football. but it would be, yeah, interesting to see whether the players at 3-1 with that atmosphere, you know, backs against the wall at times, whether they really believed, because it definitely felt there was a lot of huff but no puff. I don't even know if that makes any sense, but with like the endeavour of the players, that's why that third goal was such a killer, because it just didn't ever really feel that. Maybe two goals if you get like bring it back to 3-2 and get a lucky break, but to then win it in normal time, I don't know if the players really believe that they could do it.
Just on that point, Ali, sorry. The thing that Rive has managed to do over his tenure is give Finland footballers, the squad and the fans and the wider public belief. That's what he's been good at, you know? But that has just seemed to have eroded away like a Kentish coastline. I don't know. It's like, it's so, I think maybe you're right. They didn't believe when they came out, and that, or maybe 2-1, but yeah, as soon as that third went in, maybe that belief did just fade away. Sorry, Mark.
No, it's nothing. I mean, so belief is one thing, but in the second half, we didn't make any chances. So we got a bit of joy in the, what is it, in the half space. So down the channels on the left and the right flanks, between the flank and the centre. That small corridor was the only place we actually got any joy. We didn't have anything in the middle of the pitch. We didn't have anything going out wide on the overlap. We had almost no balls out in the box. Even if we did, I'm not sure that we had that much of a presence that would have won something. So you get into like, let's say it's 50 minutes and you've had two shots on target for the whole game. You know what I mean? One of them, Puk, is finished expertly, and now you're thinking, right, how do we work this Wales team? All I saw was balls going around the back five, maybe he's into Schuller, and then diagonals right across. And the diagonal is like, if you're an elite team, that's a brilliant tactic, but it's also a place where if you're not a great team, it's just a desperate act. You're trying to ping out something to Alho, and we had the ball in basically all the places Wales wanted us to have the ball, where they were totally fine. They were like, you stay deep, and if you want to knock it into the box, give it a shot. If you want to try and play through us, give it a shot. It's fine. Because we didn't really have the presence in the middle of the pitch. I didn't think we had... Alho did good. Hawkins did good on the flanks, but we didn't actually have anything sort of down the byline. Like, we didn't have anything into the corners. So with that, you can believe and not believe, but practically, you know, if your job is to sort of break something down, it looked like there wasn't a pattern of play or a game plan on multiple ways to get in at the Welsh. Looked like we had one way of trying to get at the Welsh, and they'd figured that out by the second half, and we didn't. I think we all game, I think, what did we have, three shots on target?
Two.
So everything we hit could have gone in, and we'd have still lost.
Yeah, and on that depressing note, the game finished 4-1. And I certainly turned off the TV pretty darn quickly and went to bed. But there has been some chat about Rive's future, and it has been, you know, the new contract is due this year, his contract ends this year, and there's a lot of speculation, will he continue, should he continue? And I think it's been said that a decision will be made after the friendly game now with Estonia on Tuesday. So anything we have to say would be speculation, and maybe we don't need to go too much into that. We can just report what happens after it's happened. But maybe just gut feel. Do each of you think Rive should stay? Do you think he will stay? And if he doesn't, who should come in to replace him? Ali.
So for those three things, I don't think he will stay. My gut is that he will go, because the feeling in Finland now, at least, yeah, from in my circles, is that now is the time, particularly where there's like some young players coming through as well. It might be a good time to get someone else in. For as long as I've been, you know, intensely following Finnish football, he's been at the helm, and I think he's done a really good job. So I'm quite conflicted about whether he should stay or should go. So I'm going to sit on the fence for that one. And then who else should come in? I don't know. I can't give you a name, because I think it really depends on where the team feel like they should be as well. Like I don't, you know, that's why I come back to the belief, you know, as Keke said, that Rive had given the team belief, you know, over the past couple of years, and I feel like that's not there anymore. So if there is going to be someone else new, it would need maybe a bit of a, I think a cultural reset is too strong, but someone with different ideas, that's for sure.
Keke, what do you think?
Similar to Ali, to be honest. I think he will go. I think the Estonia game will be his last game. The sort of noises and little quotes that have been coming out of Palloliitto seem to suggest, I mean, one of them was like, we are capable of making decisions, etc. So, I do think that will be the case. Do I want him to go? Unlike Ali, you know, there's been other managers in charge since I've been following Finland. So we all remember Hans Backer and how that worked out. We all remember Mitsu's Christmas tree and how frustrating that was. We all remember Stuart Baxter. You know what I mean? Like, so to the other question of who comes in, I think the feeling is that they will look for a foreigner. I'm not
really
100%. I'm not 100% all over that. I would like there to be a Finnish guy in charge of the Finnish national team. I think that would be important, box to tick. But I think the feeling is they may look for a foreigner. You know, a foreigner might come in with new ideas and it might all work out fantastic. I mean, for me, Rive had plenty of credit in the bank, but he's chipped away at it over quite a spell of time now, you know? I mean, we look
That's
at
also natural, players, isn't it? If you're in charge for a long time, you know, if you have a real rise, then eventually it's going to plateau and then tail off, so...
Yeah, it does happen. It's just very, very sad how that it's happening now. I mean, I imagine, like you say, it would always happen at some point, but we've got some very, very tricky Nations League games coming up, you know, and there does need to be, whether or not it's a complete cultural reset, there does need to be a full stop, miss their mark there, and then start again. So I think he'll go. You know, maybe I do think it's the right decision, and I don't know who's coming.
Mark, what do you think?
I think if you're going to go domestic, then the main choice is Simo Valakari. I think he's a good pick for the players. He likes technical football. He likes quick interplay. So I think the players would appreciate him, and I think he's a good fit for the style of play these guys can bring. If you're going to look internationally, you know, don't rule out something as crazy as going back for maybe Roy Hodgson. So Roy's available. He's ummed and ahed about retiring, but still feels like he's got a lot to give the game. I think he's still, you know, a pretty competent manager. So it's worth us maybe even thinking about it. It might be a bit of a step backwards, but also he's got a good track record, and with qualification being what it is these days, if he can bring in a bit of organization and discipline, he actually might be a nice, solid, safe pair of hands as we get through the next, you know, qualification / Nations League campaign. So something like Roy or Simo.
Wow, well, there's a prediction for you. Yeah, not half.
No, but I mean, Milati picked up his phone. Who's on the other end of it? It's Simo, right? In Finland, I think it's probably somebody like Roy Hodgson, or, you know, totally left field, Graham Potter. You know, someone progressive.
Bring him back to the Nordics.
That's it.
Okay, I reckon we should wrap it up there. There's a Finland versus Estonia game on Tuesday, where these predictions about the new manager will either seem insightful and far-seeing and clairvoyant, or absolute nonsense, as has been shown other times in the past. So let's park it there. Listener, thanks for joining us. And today I'm here with Keke. Thanks a lot, Keke.
Kiitos.
With Ali. Bye, Ali.
Kiitos, moi.
And with Mark Hayton once again. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Yay, cheers, Mark.
And until the next episode of the Finnish Football Show, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Finnish Football Show. You can find us online at finnishfootballshow.com. Remember to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening or watching. You can follow the Finnish Football Show page and group on Facebook and also on Instagram. Escape to Suomi on Twitter is now Finnish Football Show on X. And you will find us on Blue Sky at Finnish Football Pod. See the links in the episode description, along with the links to the Finnish Football Show merchandise.